Technorama episode 351 for August 8th, 2012, Out of Order.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history. And now, the news.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Where is Michael Phelps going to store all his Olympic medals?
Over there, in the media corner.
Well, that ought to draw some tourists.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for August 8th, 2012. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi. This is my daughter, Julie. And that, in the next window over, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm curious.
Curiosity killed the cat. I hope there's no cats on Mars.
Oh.
Yeah. Fire retro rockets.
You can't swing a dead rover around here without hitting a cat.
No, don't go there. Don't go there. Julie and I had so many smashed up, mashed up metaphors on Friday. It wasn't. What was our best one? More nervous than a.
No. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're more nervous than a one. No. Busier than a nervous one-man, one-legged
man in a one-legged
cat-kicking
contest. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
It was funnier after the ball game. We have much better material than that in this show, I promise you. All of it ad hoc, based on nothing, including coming up in this episode, we have not too soon to be thinking about the holidays. Turn your cell phone into a time machine. And what would you do with 1,000 computers? None of that and more coming up right after this.
Does not compute.
We got a schlug of them, to say the least, yes.
A schlug? Is that a metric schlug?
A schlug. It's a metric schlug.
I'm free! I'm open!
Oh, damn. Oh, I love turducken. I've done turducken for 2 years now. I don't remember what those are. How do we get on food? Is this the Food Network?
We can stretch anything into Technorama.
I know. Chuck is losing it. He needs vacation time.
Let's promote him to manager! You keep talking, I'll keep listening.
Well, there goes that.
The staff and editors of GameAspect.com invite you to listen to GameAspect.com's Gamecast, a podcast where every week the editors discuss the latest news and topic related to gaming and technology. Go to GameAspect.com and click on podcast to find all of the latest episodes. Or find us on iTunes under GameAspect.com.
Hey, cut it out. We're trying to broadcast here. No laughing, or someone who just listens to the audio podcast won't understand. They'll have to join the live feed on Sunday nights to understand what we're laughing about. Or you can just go watch the video. Hey, we have some actual, by gosh, listener feedback.
Whoa.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh boy,
mailman, mail today.
Our first message is from a coworker of mine, Ben S. He went to Comic-Con just after our sales kickoff in San Diego, and he said, "Hey Chuck, I went to the Walking Dead apocalypse at Petco Park. Would you like to hear about it?" And I said, with a title like that, how can I say no?
Nah, we'll pass.
I hadn't known about it before heading down after SKO, which is our sales kickoff. I spent some time at headquarters and stayed at a hotel in Old Town in the night before an early flight home Friday morning. Not being able to actually get into Comic-Con, I still took a trolley from the old town to take in the atmosphere. It was cool, but not nearly as good as being able to get in. I did discover other things going on outside the convention center, though. First, I found the Batmobile exhibit. All the different Batmobiles from the old TV series to The Dark Knight Rises.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
Didn't we see some pictures of that on the show or in the news feeds? I think so.
I think so. I know I've seen, well, we've seen them at Dragon Con. We've seen some pictures, but.
Yeah. They had some different stages set up on the waterfront and a big Lord of the Rings video game tournament. I kept wandering for a bit and figured I would walk around Petco. That's the San Diego Padres Park.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I saw the signs for the Live the Apocalypse. I love The Walking Dead, but I'm not generally a zombie fan, so I was just going to keep walking. Walking Dead. But I saw a portion of the obstacle course through the fence. This was more than just running through and dodging zombies. They had walls to climb and slides to go down, barriers to hop. It was a bit obscured, but my interest was piqued. Back to the ticket counter to find out how much it was. With the taxes and insurance. Insurance? Please wow. sign this waiver oh, to say...
Zombie you... insurance. This is a scam.
Right. The actual amount was $84. But the spectating cost was $18.50. I hesitated a bit, walking around, thought about it, then decided this could be a fun experience, even if it really only lasted about 40 minutes. There certainly wouldn't be another opportunity like it until the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Now he's more prepared than the rest of us.
Yeah, he's been through it once.
Right. The next open time slot was 7 p.m., so I had about 50 minutes to get checked in and wait. Around the corner, there was a sign flashing with a notice that Petco had been taken over by zombies. Part of the check-in was an RFID, subdermal, I hope.
Yeah. So that they, like Fry, when you know...
Right, with the hand thing.
Yeah, the thing that clamps.
So that they could track you, not sure if they actually... I thought that was so they get to identify the body after your head's been ripped apart. While waiting, I got to see Steven Yeun, Glenn from the show, getting mobbed by the fans on his way somewhere. He was apologizing profusely that he wasn't able to stop and sign autographs and have photo ops. When my time came, they corralled the group, maybe 70 to 80 people, into the entrance area, stating that we would... be briefed. I never heard the briefing, really. That's an important thing to kind of get.
Run, that's the briefing.
Head for that cement tower over there. Yeah. They moved us into the safety zone, quote unquote, where a group of zombies was caged in some fence. A photographer went over to get a picture and became the first victim. Everybody say cheese.
Yeah.
With the area no longer secured, they sent us out into a very foggy area where we had to dodge zombies.
I mean, I don't like that sentence where he says, the area no longer secure.
This led to a sort of staging area that they used to spread people out on the course, only letting through a few people at a time. Probably would have been the worst part if I hadn't been at the front of the group, because it looked like people had to wait a while. I since looked on YouTube because I saw some people going through with hat cams and recording video with their phones.
Ooh, that's cool. That'd be awesome.
This proceeded with military directing us to safety or warning us that there were zombies to watch out for. Lots of cool obstacle walls, slides, tunnels, nets. Some places were very difficult to get around, and I found myself getting winded quite often. Thankfully, they had water stops along the way. Oh, zombies, they move fast.
Yeah, and they're courteous.
Brains, wash it down.
Water!
At the end, they scan you with black lights for infection, and when you walk over the RFID sensors, they call your name to put you in quarantine. I wasn't called, thankfully, but one of the guys around me said they put a bullet in his head. Wow. Okay. Sir, step this way.
Man, it was realistic.
Still not sure how they selected zombies, but it almost seemed like it was some sort of volunteer program. I saw the entrance, but I don't know how they were selected. There was really only one area for spectators, and it wasn't the most interesting. I'm not sure it would have been worth the price to watch. They gave us all special limited edition issues of The Walking Dead 100 at the end. Very cool. But not easy to carry around, especially after climbing through the blood and other things on the course.
It was in mint condition. That's got blood all over it.
That seems like it would make it worth more than mint condition.
True.
Authentic zombie blood on it.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. We also...
See, you should have stayed, Chuck.
What's that?
You should have stayed.
I should have stayed. Even though I don't do The Walking Dead, I still would have had fun with the walking apocalypse thing.
Well, see, you can have your regret, and I regret that I didn't meet Stan Lee when I had the chance.
Right. All right, we also have another feedback from PC Herring. We were talking about the Olympic swimsuits on the last episode, episode 350, about how they went from short to long and what that was all about.
Yeah, and by the way, we're not going to show his picture that was included in where he was wearing it.
No pictures.
He included a picture of himself wearing the Olympic suit. We will decline to...
Before and after.
Yeah. PC Herring, author and vocalist on the Cybrosis series audiobook. Mm-hmm. You got to go listen to that if you haven't heard it yet, because I'm in it too. He writes in, Chuck and Craig, was listening to Technorama 350, and I heard Chuck asking about when the men's swimmers switched from the Speedo brief style, the swimsuit, to the jammer shorts they're wearing in London. There's a short answer, but I'm going to give you the longer answer because it's pretty geeky. But the longer answer also requires a little bit of history lesson. So, let's set the TARDIS for Athens in 2004. In the months ahead of the Athens Games, Speedo introduced a new line of competitive swimwear, which they called the Fast Skin. The line sported a full body swimsuit that not only reduced drag in the water by providing consistent smooth surface to contact the water, as opposed to the human skin, but also compressed the body ever so slightly to reduce the surface area, which would thus further reduce drag in the water. Here's an image of Phelps and his teammates in the Fast Skin. So he provides us a link. The line was successful, and like everything else in the world, Speedo set out to improve the technology. Fast forward to Beijing, 2008. By this time, swimmers from around the world had adopted the new suits as the new standard for the sport. However, Speedo wasn't done, and they came out with the LZR Racer, pronounced Laser Racer. Here's another picture he includes. If Faskin was the next generation, Laser was the next gen's next gen. According to Wikipedia, like other suits used for competition, it allows for better oxygen flow to the muscles and holds the body in more hydrodynamic position while repelling water and increasing flexibility.
By the way, that picture right there, he looks like he sees trouble on the horizon. He's about to fly off.
That looks like the one that Misty Franklin was wearing. That almost looks like a women's swimsuit.
Unisex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably is. Well, he just needs a cape.
Right.
You know.
Mask.
Wow. He goes on and goes a long way with this history lesson. We're going to have to post the rest of that in there. That is awesome stuff. But apparently Speedo just wants to make another buck. It's kind of like George Lucas and the Star Wars movies, apparently. Yeah. We'll improve technology. You know, I was wondering why... Could a swimmer, and maybe they test for this or not, but what if you used like cocoa butter or something?
Can't they? Don't they use Vaseline?
To reduce the drag or?
Oh, I thought you meant to get it on. You know.
I wasn't going to go there, but you just made a bad innuendo that I'm leaving alone.
No, to put on the swimsuit. What? Get your mind out of the gutter.
That's where I got it the first time.
Swimsuit on, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, there is a picture on one of the links he points to at Wikipedia. It has them, let's say Michael Phelps, or maybe it's just three models. But there's a men and women on the stage, and they all look like they're wearing the same suit. So, yes, it looks unisex.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
We have been here for 15 minutes already, and we haven't even gotten to On This Day in History, so let's quickly remind people that you have inspired a few people to do a new pet project this summer called the Dog Days of Podcasting. You can find a link on our wiki at chuckchat.com/wiki, and you, me, Matt Marv, Justin Deal, a.k.a. Null Operations, what's his podcast? He's called The Hidden Node, something like that?
That's right.
Yeah, The Hidden Node. And we've got RSS feeds and whatnot in the show notes if you want to subscribe. And Clinton from Comedy Forecast is giving it a try, although I think some of them are slipping. I don't see any podcasts for yesterday or today.
Well, Clinton, I think he said he was going to try. He's on vacation and
one
with
more
family.
So. Dude, Craig, you have made this so easy, thankfully, goodnessly, that you just pick up your phone and talk to it for 3 minutes and then press publish. Mm-hmm. And it shows up on the site and in the RSS and the iTunes and everything else. It's like press, talk, done.
I know. It's pretty nice, isn't it?
No, it's only 3 minutes. It's kind of like an audio Twitter, but it's actually fun. Julie and I are having a grand old time.
Yeah. No, I've enjoyed listening to them all because I've heard Kyle talk about his one of his photography.
Yeah.
The 12 rolls thing and then hear YouTube hamming it up and whatnot. And so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It is like you said earlier, it's like the early days of podcasts where people are going, "Oh, you know, today I did this," you know, and it's kind of a little personal.
Yeah, a little behind podcast. The scenes.
And that's what I was
behind the scenes.
And
stuff.
That's what I was shooting for, really.
All right, let's get on with my favorite part. On this day in history for August 8, 2012, it was on this date in 1576 that the cornerstone for Tycho Brahe's Uhrenberg Observatory was laid in heaven. Sorry, Yorga.
And John Davies... No, it's not Davies. And John Davis enters Cumberland Sound in the search for the Northwest Passage today in 1585.
Also today in 1709, Bartolomeu de Gusmão demonstrates the lifting power of a hot air. Sorry. Now you will feel the full power of my hot air. air balloon in the audience before the King of Portugal in Lisbon.
In August 8th, 1786, Mont Blanc on the French-Italian borders is climbed... What? Wait a minute. August 8th, 1786, Mont Blanc on the French-Italian border is climbed for the first time by Jacques Blanc and Dr. Michael Gabriel Picard.
209 years after the John Davis incident that Craig stumbled over, the search for the Northwest Passage, Joseph Whidbey leads an expedition to search for the Northwest Passage near Juneau, Alaska. That was on August 8th, 1794.
And 136 years ago, Thomas Edison receives a patent for his mimeograph.
Schools when I was a kid will never be the same. Today in 1908, Wilbur Wright makes his first flight at a race course at Le Mans, France. It was the Wright brothers' first public flight.
Hmm. And the German airship Graf Zeppelin begins around the world flight in August 8, 1929.
Woo, Zeppelin! Just Yay. 1 year after the first atomic bomb was dropped, we saw the first flight of the Convair B-36, the world's first mass-produced nuclear weapon delivery vehicle.
And this is also the 49th anniversary of the Great Train Robbery in England. A gang of 15 train robbers steal 2.6 million pounds of franc notes. That's pretty heavy.
Bank notes, not franc notes. On this momentous day in 1974, President Richard Nixon, in a nationwide television address, announces his resignation from the office as President of the United States, effective noon the next day.
And today, in 1989, the Space Shuttle Columbia takes off on mission STS-28 on a secret... 5-day military mission.
Excellent. The Warsaw Radio Mast, at one time, the tallest construction ever built, collapses on this date 21 years ago.
And 12 years ago, Confederate submarine H.L. Hunley is raised from the surface after 136 years on the ocean floor.
If you were born on August 8th, you share your birthday with the likes of American physicist and Nobel Prize laureate Ernest O. Lawrence, born on this date in 1901.
And also born today 110 years ago, is English physicist and Nobel Prize laureate Paul Dirac.
Two birthdays for August 8th, 1921. British physicist John Herbert Chapman and actress-swimmer Esther Williams.
And British physicist Sir Roger Penrose turns 81 today.
He was on Dr. Carl's show a couple years ago, but I remember him. They were talking about all kinds of physicist stuff. The man who brought the TV series like Magnum P.I., Airwolf, Quantum Leap, and many others, TV producer Donald Belisario, is 77 today.
And celebrating her 64th birthday today, Russian cosmonaut and first woman to perform a spacewalk,
Svetlana Savitskaya. I told you that like too. 2 weeks ago. Maybe last week. I don't know. It was recently. Yeah. Okay. Irish guitarist for U2, The Edge is 51. Happy birthday, The.
And Swiss tennis player Roger Federer turns 31.
He's in the Olympics. Finally, August 8th is the earliest day on which Melon Day, celebrated on the second Sunday in August in Turkmenistan, can fall. Well, August 14th is the latest, and that's the way it was, melons and all, on this day in history for August 8th, 2012.
So excited for Melon Day. We got a muskmelon, and we cut it up, and we ate it.
We celebrated early.
It was loads of fun. Yeah.
Couldn't wait till Sunday.
We laughed, we cried, it became a part of us.
We wore our muskmelon hats.
Tons of fun, Melon Day.
It's a good old time.
Use your melon. Okay.
Don't forget your melon shoes.
And the good news keeps on coming.
The good news is that I'm not going to be up this late, but as we record this, Curiosity will land tonight at 1:31 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday, August 6th. That's your birthday, so you have something else to remember on this day in history.
Yeah, you know, I showed Harrison that. I talked about this in my podcast over at spindle.com, SPYNDLE. And I showed him.
Wait, I got the bell for you if you want it.
Yeah, ding. I showed him the 7 minutes of terror. There you go. The 7 minutes of terror video. You saw that from NASA, right? You guys saw that?
Didn't you mention that last week?
Yeah, and then we're talking about the delay, the signal coming from Mars, and how long it takes to get down to the surface would be about 7 minutes. So
oh, yeah.
That with the 14-minute delay, there's about 7 minutes discrepancy where they wouldn't know whether it landed properly or not. So anyway, he saw that, and he was pretty excited about it. And we were going to watch it this afternoon, like we talked about earlier, and turns out that would be a.m.? Sorry.
Yeah.
So
we'll DVR it or something.
I'm almost excited enough to stay up, but then again, I'm thinking, I'll be hurting in the morning. So I'd rather just get up and
find out
tell
if it
me
worked.
What happened.
Right, yeah. Right. Did it work? Yep. No. Good.
Because I can guarantee you my RSS feeds are going to be full of it tomorrow. So I'm going to know anyway.
Absolutely. And, it's one of those things that I love to see, but, let's be practical. Some of us have to work in the morning.
Well, that's just it. You're not seeing it happen.
Right. Well, Kyle's in Hawaii. He's got an opportunity.
No, I meant.
Oh, wait. Opportunity's already there.
No, I mean, there's nothing you're going to see except for the first image.
Fire the retro rockets. We saw this next story, and Julie said, this is going to be one of those ones that somebody asked, what's your Technorama about? And we're going to add this to the list with canned unicorn meat. And what were the other ones? We've got to have this laundry list of what do you talk about on Technorama? Well, tech-savvy sheep that shoot their shepherds a text when wolf attacks. Yes, that's it. Shepherding is a profession
tweeting
as
sheep.
Ancient as civilization. But that doesn't mean it can't benefit from a little tech. New heart monitoring collars let sheep shoot their shepherd a text whenever they're in danger. Bah, 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 bah. I got it. Thanks.
What?
Thanks,
what
Fluffy.
Is he saying?
The concept was proven in a recent experiment in Switzerland, where a dozen sheep were fitted with heart monitoring collar and then harassed by a pair of muzzled wolf dogs. Woof, 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 woof. Beep, 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 beep.
Hey, then pretty soon the wolf said, I got my eye on a couple of sheep. That's what he tweets. And then the other one, then the sheep see that, and then they actually, kind of goes down from there.
The sheep are following you on Twitter. Ah, that's a bad sign when the sheep are following the wolf. The fox is following the hen.
See, that's the flaw in the wolf's plan is that the sheep are actually following him with a pseudonym.
Although this isn't Twitter. This is the sheep get to text the shepherd right away. So the shepherd gets woke up at 3 a.m. Bah, yeah. Bah, 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 bah. The stress of being harassed by a pair of muzzled wolfhounds got the sheep's hearts going enough that it could be used in an alert system that texts a shepherd when his sheep are starting to freak out. Of course, there are other older ways of keeping your herd safe from a wolf attack, like keeping them mostly in sight or having a sheepdog. The texting collars could prove to be a cheaper and simpler alternative for shepherds with small flocks. Besides that, guard dogs aren't exactly popular in touristy areas. Any shepherds who opt for this method just better make sure that the flock is grazing somewhere with good cell reception.
There's something wrong about this.
this comment at the bottom, neat idea, but they should use Twitter so I can follow and pretend I have sheep.
I pretend I'm the wolf. The wolf is following you on Twitter.
Ah, before you know it, the sheep are following the Kardashians and the hunt of the herd.
The dangers of giving your sheep a cell phone.
That's a strange sheep. All right, I saw this one, didn't think it was worthy of the notes, but you did, and...
oh, my.
Yeah, this is... Oh, my.
Hey, all right, go ahead and read the title, and I've got something to say.
Yeah, you did. Guy gets Darth Vader tattoo on face.
Okay, before I clicked on the link originally, what popped in your mind? Well, I mean, I'll tell you what
like,
popped in
mind. That
he
actually had his face tattooed like Vader.
I thought he had his whole the mask on his face.
Right,
right.
No, he just put it on his cheek with roses.
Not just that. Hey, not just that. He put roses behind it.
Isn't that lovely?
Both masculine and feminine.
Come on, that's so out of canon. Darth Vader didn't even touch a flower at all.
How do you know what he was doing? There's got to be an arboretum on the Death Star somewhere.
When the camera wasn't on him, he's like...
I love the center of roses.
Padme.
I love gardenias.
They remind me of Padme.
No! Weeds! No!
I will choke you, weed.
This arboretum is fully operational.
Surely this guy had been... drinking.
I'm sure he was drinking, and don't call me Shirley.
That's right.
Wait, where is it?
What? There. Oh, that'll work too.
That'll work too.
Yeah, it's on his cheek. And you know what's funny? Look closely at the Vader. It looks like he's got blood tears. Or is that just the guy bleeding?
You know, I'm going to have a lot easier time teaching Sunday school this fall because... apparently, another gentleman has made a full-scale, seaworthy replica of Noah's Ark. He's ready for the apocalypse in whatever form it comes in.
Thing's huge.
The original dimensions of it from the Bible were 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Now, he built this on a barge, so he didn't really have to worry about, is it seaworthy? Did he get the keel right? That kind of thing. But technically it is seaworthy because, you know, in a sense, his Noah's Ark was a barge if you go by what this diagram looks like.
It is huge. I wouldn't mind checking it out inside.
It took him 4 years. Wasn't that about how long Noah's took?
I don't know.
It was some ridiculously long amount of time because his neighbors mocked him and, you know, he's blocking all the skylight light
out
of
it. Shut up! I'm building it anyway!
God told me! Yeah. I'm still going!
Oh, wait, there's a video where a tour. That's kind of neat.
Wow, quite the skylight in that thing.
Does he have the animals?
Or is it not done yet? Oh, man, start stuffing animals into that thing? I don't think the ASPCA would be too kind about that.
Nor will the atmosphere.
The wooden creation, 4 years in the making, is the second one he's built. In 2004, he built a half-scale version that he sailed around his native countryside canals. Oh, boy, this is in the UK. That's lovely.
What
you can find out more on Sky News.
What does that mean?
It means they're very creative, and, well, they have lots of canals. And if the canals ever flood, he's ready to go. He should take this to the Netherlands. Don't they have lots of flooded land over there?
That's not creative. Weren't you just saying stop doing remakes?
Yeah, stop doing remakes. Hollywood is after this man for a movie contract.
See, what you don't know is the top opens up, some propellers come out, and it flies. Wasn't there a cartoon?
It's been rebooted.
Wasn't there a cartoon that was like that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that was. It looked like
Noah's Ark, but the propellers would come out, and they would fly.
Oh, my goodness.
While we're straining our brains, we'll take a quick break, where we will be back with the Remember When segment. And, we've got another birthday computer coming up, and... you know, some strange coincidence that I found out between Batman Dark Knight Rises and Star Trek Nemesis. Coming up right after this.
Yeah, so I get all this functionality. Look, honey, I'm watching a trailer off the internet.
Oh, man, I'm getting more and more eager to buy one. Don't even
try it. When I moved it, I heard something going, guess what was in there?
Harrison,
we don't get more subscribers, we're gonna fall off the list. Man.
It's more complex than that. All we ask is that you tell a friend a week, and if you like Technorama, odds are they will like Technorama.
Throw us a bone here.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, host of the Comic Timing Podcast over at SpeakGeekSpeak.com/Comic Timing. Comic Timing is a roundtable discussion podcast with a rotating panel of guests. So rather than me talking through this entire promo, here's some random snippets from the show with as many people as I can possibly find on my hard drive that have been on this show, and I don't even want to count how many that is.
Mr. Cole, bullshit. I'll grant you.
But aren't they all?
What is he wearing, Ian?
You have won a brand new Skype.
Yay.
Yeah, you, me, and a brick the next time we're in New York.
I was going to say that in 1 year, this recording is going to end up in some court report. You know?
I've actually been on other people's podcasts more than I've actually done my own in the year 2007.
Well, I know that feeling.
Her name is X23. I mean, she's got to live her life as X23.
It's very good because it's not written by Daniel Way.
This is Batman.
Yes, I love Puck.
You just can't put a cow on the logo.
Exactly. Interested in finding out how these things actually play into the context of the show? Well, go ahead and listen to it. It's over at SpeakGeekSpeak.com/Comic Timing. You can find us on iTunes, and we are all over the place on all your podcast aggregators and the works. So go ahead and check out Comic Timing, and remember, as always, there's always time for comics.
Welcome back. We want to remind you that every week this is a team sport, and we have a team in the chat room. We have a team that's joined us live on Google Hangouts. In the chat room, we have AD Waters of Mars, Claudio M, C. Tomasi Spirit, Curiosity Tim, Groove, Marviosity, Racer X, who I understand is a recent listener of about 2 weeks. Interesting tale there. His new Droid 4 had our show preloaded on it. He thought it was so great. He's going back and listening to old stuff. God bless him.
That's cool.
Yeah, I want to know how he did that so I can cruelly punish others that way. And then we have you and ZML2008 in the chat room.
Anyway, hey, by the way, you said his phone came preloaded with Droid, or his Droid, was it Droid X or whatever
it
was?
Yeah, Droid 4 with the Technorama.
See, that's it must have been a return to the store.
I'm thinking it was a refurb. Yeah.
Was it?
It's returned. I can't listen to this.
Yeah, they didn't wipe the phone before they gave it to him.
Oh, this must have been a prisoner's phone. Sorry, we were doing some experiments with them again. What do they got to lose? Oh. All right, looking at the birthday calendar, we have August 8th is Philippa Ballantyne. Yay, Pip. August 9th, Matt Coe, a.k.a. Wow Addict. August 9th, Julia Pose. Is she still 11 years old in our little sweeper thing that we've got?
Yes.
What was that, about 8 years ago?
They actually found the secret to long-lasting life.
Oh, yeah. Living forever means just record a sweeper in an ID. August 10th is Sam Martin. August 11th, Steve Wozniak. August 11th is also David Brewer, Tryon the Imp. So we have 8, 9, 10, 11.
Hey,
wow.
Is my birthday not on the birthday calendar?
You were last week. You were August 6. Okay. Happy birthday, Julie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Look at you. I hope we don't go back and listen because we didn't say it. Oh, was that on the air? Sorry. In the Remember When segment. How can you not dance to that music? That is awesome.
I know.
Life was tough in Victorian times, so tough that in fact little girls in 1840 played with dollhouses that featured butcher shops complete with miniature animal carcasses and floors covered in sawdust and blood. Hey, bring on the entrails.
Hey, you know what this reminds me of? When I was a kid, I had a Play McDonald's set.
Oh, yeah, thing, right?
Complete with entrails on the floor. Yeah. Why the grisly realism? According to Sarah Louise Wood, a curator at the Museum of Childhood at the Victoria and Albert Museum, the toy animal flesh wouldn't have been shocking because this is how meat was presented and bought, and with limited methods of refrigeration, children would have seen, would have been used to seeing preserved cuts of meat hanging up. Charming. hey, you know, you can walk downtown San Francisco and see, you know, ducks hanging upside down in the shop windows. There's nothing wrong with that.
I wouldn't think this would be too jarring. I guess for the kids that have been ultra sheltered, you know, for...
Ask Harrison if he wants a dollhouse like this. Hey, no. Harrison, you want to see some meat hanging in the window?
No, I'd have to say action figure house, not right, dollhouse. Yeah.
And don't forget how sausage is made. Bring along your schnitzel bonk.
It's right there in the back room.
Oh, my gosh.
We have another computer. You know, just this last week, you were boasting about the Commodore 64 turning 30. Uh-huh. Well, there's another anniversary that happened on Friday, April or August 3rd. The TRS-80 personal computer turned 35.
I'm sorry, you mispronounced that.
Trash 80. I was being kind, all right? 35 years ago today, at a press conference held inside New York City's Warwick Hotel, Radio Shack unveiled the Trash 80 personal computer. Model 1, arguably once the most important... One of the most import gadgets, I think they got a typo in there, important gadgets to be born in the latter half of the 20th century, coming with 4 kilobytes of memory and a cassette tape deck with which to load programmies. The Trash 80 ran about $600 retail. That's including Radio Shack's 12-inch black and white display, which didn't come standard but was necessary addition to the package for anyone interested in doing with the computer things required a monitor. Very necessary. Today, the same amount of money, you could buy yourself a very nice iPad. I wonder where we'll be in another 35 years. Someone in the comments write, I'm actually typing this from a Trash 80 right now.
Yeah, all right.
I finally installed that TCP/IP stack. Yay. Look at there. I got this comic book. This is not my image, but I got a comic book where we've talked about this before, where Superman and a couple of whiz kids go into the TRS-80.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Superman advertising computers. Yeah,
little computers like the TRS-80. It's in bold italic. Can perform calculations, solve problems, and play games, compare and analyze information. So
more efficiently and faster than the old room-sized computers. But most important, they are... You took it away, man. I was reading it.
Sorry.
I was trying to do my best Clark Kent. Most importantly, they are creating a revolution in our way of life.
Sounds more like some Einstein or something.
Room-sized computers.
Yeah, room-sized computers.
What would you do with 1,000 computers?
You're not supposed to put things in the...
Put anything you want anywhere.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Now, I don't know about you, but when I first watched Batman The Dark Knight Rises, I thought the voice sounded an awful lot like Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. Bane's voice sounded like Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah. I guess from the trailers I've heard that, yes.
This is a very secure facility.
Like, wow.
It's like Sean Connery under there.
Yeah, I thought maybe they overdubbed him. It turns out the actor, and as far as I know, the voice of Bane is actually Tom Hardy, who you might recognize from Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, of course.
Where'd the poster go? I moved it. It was right here for the longest time. I must have moved it.
It's one of the movies you would have... It's probably sitting behind another poster.
Yeah, probably. But Tom Hardy was a skinny little dude, but that was 10 years ago. So whatever he and Chris Hemsworth are taking at Hollywood, I want some, first of all. And there's a screen test. We'll have the link in the show notes. A screen test from when he was doing his Shinzon discussion with Picard. He goes, Picard's always warriors. And Picard responds, I'm more of an explorer. And they're having that discussion about how Shinzon is Picard and Picard, you know, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. He says, surely you recognize the eyes, you know, the nose has been broken, the jaw has been broken because of my rough upbringing and whatnot. And his screen test is actually closer to Bane and actually a better, you know, I would have liked to see that acting before the directors filed it and honed it into what it was. Because they were playing them side by side. They'd play about 30 seconds of Shinzon and Picard, and then they'd play the finished product. And you're like, you know, I kind of like the screen test a little bit better. It was a little rougher and a little, you know, edgier.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of more like Bane, where he's like, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing for a reason kind of thing. It came across as more genuine in the screen test. But I was just, when I found out who it was, the actor, I went, wow, man, guys,
the arms.
Built. You know, the guy's got guns.
Hey, what, have you ever seen Carrot Top?
Not recently. I
mean, well, the carrot, you remember how Carrot Top used to look, right? He's kind of a lanky redhead, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to show you a picture here.
Has totally. He been working out, son?
Yes. Here you go.
See, you know, you can't do Zoidberg without the fingers in front of the mouth, but you can't do Bane without putting your hand over your mouth.
Look. The heck?
Whoa. No, come on. That's got to be Photoshopped.
That is him right there. Hold on. Let me
seriously? He's got like Gene Simmons old do.
I am not kidding you. That is Carrot Top.
That's frightening.
You know what I keep thinking? Remember there was like some superhero, I can't remember its name, where he's a carrot and he's like kind of buffed out.
Kind of a superhero is a carrot?
Wait a minute. I don't know. Let's find out. Carrot superhero. He sees in the dark. No, I don't know.
Hey, kids, you got really good eyesight doing this.
Yeah. I can't remember the name. Is it DC character? Yeah. I can't remember. Anyway.
All right, you keep looking for this. We're going to move to the Geek Library. In the Geek Library, we found something that you posted to Google Plus, and Kyle thought it was cool enough to post on our site. So I'm mentioning this in the show just as a rare one-off. The Geek Zodiac. If you look for the year of your birth, let's see. I was born under the sign of...
Astronaut, yes!
That's what Kyle was, too.
That's me.
You're born under the sign of the astronaut?
Best sign.
Yeah.
I can't figure out what is this sign. Oh, I'm under the sign of the pirate. Arg, mateys.
Oh, you were born in 93?
Me, yeah.
Yeah, and Chuck, you were born in when?
65. So I'm under the sign of the pirate, and qualities of the pirate are natural leader, bon vivre. What does that mean? Good
liver.
Living? Charismatic. Unfortunately, the cons of this, the demerits, are restless, quick to anger, and untrustworthy. I'm not sure I agree with all of those. Why 1881? Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island begins serialized publication in that. So you're astronauts?
Astronauts, yes.
Year of the We also have Year of the Robot, Year of the Wizard, Alien, Superhero, Undead Slayer, Dekaiu, Time Traveler, Year of the Spy, Year of the Astronaut, Merits, Bold, Team-Oriented, Precise, sounds like you, Julie. Demerits, Untethered, Distant, Controlling, doesn't sound like you, Julie. Craig, you're also... No.
I'm also the astronaut. 1969, man.
You kids.
Then there's Year of the Ninja / Samurai and Year of the Treasure Hunter.
Year of the Treasure Hunter.
He looks like an octopus.
Was that... Why 1935? Oh, because that's the year Dr. Henry Indiana Jones Jr.'s first cinematic adventure is depicted in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I thought it was because that's when Nicolas Cage was born for Treasure Island. Treasure
Island. That was National Treasure.
National Treasure. Sorry, I got the pirate thing mixed up again, too.
Anyway, this is pretty cool. I like this.
Here's a did you know, and last of our Olympic stories before the Olympics are done. Hopefully you'll hear this before the Olympics are done. You know, they don't use the starters pistols anymore. They don't.
What do they do? Stamp their feet, clap,
no,
or something?
There's actually a speaker behind each of the starter blocks because if the starter was on the inside of the track and went bang, the speed of sound meant the person on the furthest lane out wouldn't hear the sound until milliseconds after. And milliseconds are critical in the race. So, Michael Johnson's reaction time, he said, was 440 thousandths of a second. Normally, athletes lead between 130 and 140 thousandths of a second. I asked him, why did you have such a bad starting time? Turned out Johnson was in the ninth position, and the sound of the gun reached him too slowly. 0.4 of a second is a massive amount of time in a sprint, which sounds even crazier when you realize that it's caused by the amount of time it takes for the bang to go from the gun to the athlete's ears, 20 yards away in the starting blocks. It turns out that even though they have they were doing both for a while. They had the horn behind them and the starter gun, so they go bang, and it would be rebroadcast. They wouldn't go by the speaker behind them. They would go by the actual gun sound, and it would still slow them down. So now they just have the sound. There's no gun anymore. They just go bang out of that, or beep. What is it?
It's a bang sound, sort of still.
And they take off, but at least they're all starting at the same time. Isn't that crazy? You never would have thought that the speed of sound was so influential. Look how long
it took them to think of that.
Well, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't even thought about it. Well, I guess if I was...
If you were running the races, I guess you'd notice.
If it's a long race, someone's got to... Maybe it's not so influential in, you know, the longer races, like the 10,000 meter, but someone's got to go out there after the race and get the starting blocks sprints, and the speakers. Yeah, the 100 meter sprints.
Yeah, with fast. A sprint, you got to start fast. So, yeah, if you missed it...
That's crazy.
Hmm.
That brings us to the end.
Some nerd up in the audience going, wait a minute.
Speed of sound.
Yeah.
They figured this all out on the Big Bang Theory. Yeah. I'm sure Sheldon was
quickly ostracized
there.
And escorted out of the building.
Yep. And then they put it into effect and somebody else took credit.
Sure.
Yeah. The ref goes, he's right. Okay.
That brings us to the end of the show. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to listen to our summer of podcasting, Dog Days of Podcasting. Is that what it is? Dog Days of Podcasting?
We each have our own show titles, but it's just the Dog Days of Podcasting All right. Challenge.
We appreciate your support. If you want to have fun, listen to those. They're short. They're sweet. You don't spend hours and hours listening to a podcast every day. You should. Call Listener Line if you want to get in touch with us. If you have any comments about swimsuits or starters guns or... Shinzon's voice, I don't care. 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-428. This is the part where Julie usually fades out, right? You zone out at this part?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Email us, technorama at chuckchat.com. Craig's got to pay attention at some point because he's got to go 101, right?
Yeah.
Visit the website for all that and more. Thank you to the following people. Mad Marv for providing all the great blog content during the week. And, everyone who sent us links and feedback and whatnot to the show, there was so much stuff this week. It was a real trial to figure out what's going in the show and what's not. Thank you for all the donators to the tip jar. Your donations make a world of difference to us. And keep the show going. Thanks for those who joined us on the Hangout. Yay! And thank you for downloading and listening to the show. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media and all the great podcasts over there. Whew! This gets harder to do every week. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and remember, listen to the Dog Days of Podcasting available over at the wiki at chuckchat.com/wiki. Until next time, give me a binary high five.
101.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.